Well, this morning we're continuing our Freedom Fridays series with Dan Haynes, who joins us this morning. Dan, as most folks will probably know him, as the manager, the director of the Nishna Valley Family YMCA here in Atlantic, but we're going to talk a little bit about the other side of his life. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Jim.
You spent how long in the service?
21 years in the Iowa National Guard.
Why did you first get involved? When did you join?
Joined in 86, somewhere in there in that time frame. Really joined because I needed some college money. And a few years before that, my brother had joined, and I said, no, I'll never do that. And come to paying for college, I needed something to do. So, and it was a monthly check, so it worked out well. So, and it was good.
While you were in school, was the schedule reasonable for you to handle?
Yeah. They were. Our unit was fine. I was up in Sheldon, Iowa, at the 2168 Trance Company, and they were very flexible, especially with college kids and high school kids that were getting ready to graduate. But they were worked around all of our schedules because I was in wrestling back then and those kind of things. So. Very flexible for me.
How long was your initial commitment?
It would have been 6 years. It would have been four active and then two on reserve, and I just kept renewing.
I was going to say, you said 6 years, but you just mentioned 21 years before you retired from that portion of your life. Why'd you keep going back?
Really, I enjoyed what I was doing, and by the time I still needed the money in that second term, so that was good. It was still good money, and then by the time you get 12 done, you might as well finish it. So that's really the way it went. So, really, the reason you stay is for the people. So it was really enjoyable time with the camaraderie with the guys and ladies at that time. So,
can you talk a little bit about what you were doing during your training and during that first 6 years here locally?
The first 11 years that I was in, we were a mechanized infantry unit, so we were trained in that. So we would spend all of our summers up at Camp Ripley in Minnesota and did mechanized infantry things. And I specifically was a track commander, so I drove the track and the armored personnel carriers, I guess.
You're one of those guys that we'd pass by on the interstate every now and again?
Yes, absolutely. So we, yeah. And I'd haul the people around, and then every few years I'd run the commander of the company. I'd drive him around in the armored personnel carrier. So that was our first 11 years, just doing maneuvers. You know, we've been out to California a few times to the National Training Center and down at Camp Dodge. So it was just all over the place.
And then along comes this little Middle East thing, and driving back and forth from here to there on the interstate and back roads and whatever. Seemed like a pretty great assignment when all of a sudden you get called to active duty overseas.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a whole different world. I mean, in that after the first 11 years, we were transitioned to a transportation company. Mm-hmm. So our job was really a whole lot different because we were over-the-road transportation. So our first several years in that duty in the States, we would just haul everybody else's stuff to wherever they were doing their annual training. So if, Red Oak was going to go to California to train, we'd truck all their stuff out there for them. So it was really over-the-road tactical unit.
Well, the active duty notice, did you see that one coming? Were you kind of prepared for it? I'm sure your training prepared you for what you were supposed to be getting into here. But when you first joined for some college money, you probably didn't think much about the possibility of overseas active duty.
No, we really were probably oblivious to that kind of stuff. But we saw the handwriting on the wall, especially when they started training us in California at the training centers and doing more of those overseas tactical type things. But then when they took the trucks, our green trucks, and painted them brown, it was a pretty good indicator that something was going on. So. Our unit consisted of we had four platoons, and then in 03, or actually 02, 03, they called up just my platoon, sent us to Georgia to be activated with another unit from Alabama. We trained down there for 3 months, and then they had change of heart, and they sent us home. So then we spent a year back here just getting ready, training, and then in 04, 05, then they called the whole unit up and they sent us over to Iraq.
How many times did you have to go overseas?
Just once overseas. So,
what was that like for you? Were you, I know you're training prepares you for certain things that you're going to run into. It's always a little bit different when you actually get there and face the reality of it. But were you mentally prepared for that?
I think we were. I mean, our biggest challenge was right here in Iowa, trying to get out of Iowa. We did our activation down at Camp Dodge in Des Moines, and then we were leaving out of Fort Sill, Oklahoma. And on that trip, coming out of Camp Dodge, we had a truck that crashed and killed two of our soldiers right there. And so it was a terrible start to our trip. So, you know, you're really wondering, how in the world is this going to go, you know, getting overseas and doing all those kind of things. But after that, we brought everybody home that we went over there with. So, you know, you can never prepare your mind for what's going to go on over there or what to expect, because nobody can really describe what all goes on there. So, we fared pretty well.
It's difficult really to explain to folks who haven't been there or haven't paid much attention to it, to what it's like to have to fight a war in the first place, but also one where the opposition's not wearing uniforms. And, you know, sometimes you're in close quarters in cities. Sometimes you're out in wide open spaces in deserts and what have you. Sometimes you're in mountainous regions. I mean, you never really know for sure day to day what you're getting into. Contrary to popular belief, the Middle East is not just one really hot desert. They have really cold winters there, too.
Absolutely. There are, our job was to transport everything that came out of the Gulf up into Iraq and to, you know, the 20 or how many ever camps that were up there. So we were on the road all the time. And like you say, the biggest constant for us was the threat of roadside bombs. And that was the gist of it. And then when you're traveling through the Baghdad area, you know, you always travel at night, so you can't see anything going on. And of course, they can see all of you because you've got 30 trucks in a line on the interstate with your lights on. So it's kind of a crazy time going through there. But you know, it's we were prepared well. We had good equipment. We were very lucky that our company was the first company to have semis that had up armor on them, that had the full armor out of the factory on them. So that was very nice for us.
But still, you're largely traveling out there as kind of a moving target.
Yes, yeah. And you, I mean, there's so much, you know, in your training back here in the States, they help you try to identify things along the road that might be potential hazards. But over there, everything, I mean, it's just, there's garbage up and down the roads and, you know, all kinds of different things that you wouldn't normally see around the States. And you know everything could be a bomb. So it's just you're kind of just play it as you go.
Technology, circumstances, all different from what, for example, say Vietnam, Korea, World War II veterans may have faced. Technologies have changed and things too. Did you have an opportunity to kind of keep in touch, maybe a little bit more, with your family back home?
Yeah, every camp over there had some type of a communication system, whether it was telephones, and not always terribly reliable, but they're there. And then they also had some internet cafes, those kind of things. So there were opportunities at most places to be able to do that. And in our line of work over there, we were at a camp every night. You didn't stay out, well, except for a few nights, you didn't stay outside the camp because it was a protected area. So there was times for telephone calls or even Skype or things like that. At that time, we were able to get right on that. Our company actually purchased our own satellite. So when we were back at our camp, then we had some satellite opportunities to be able to use that as far as video chatting, I guess. And one of the nice things about the Atlantic community and the Y, when I went over there, not sure all who it was, but some volunteers and the board at the Y gathered up money and bought me a satellite phone. So that was very nice. So even when there wasn't wasn't cell phone service out on the road, I could flip out the cell phone or the satellite phone and call from anywhere on the road. Now, I mean, it was dependent on satellites too, but
right. Keeping in touch like that back home when you're gone for better part of a year, was that more comforting to you out on the road or to your family back home?
I think it's both. I mean, it makes it feel like you weren't as gone as much, I guess, because when you know exactly how the kids did in their basketball game that night or how their grades are doing or how Leslie's work day was. You know, it's if you're involved in all of those things every day, or even every other day, you know, it's sure a lot easier to be able to transition back home when you do come home. So
try to keep normal in your life as much as you can when things aren't normal.
Absolutely.
Very good. And when you left the service, you left after 21 years, had a chance to do a lot of things, see a lot of things. Just the time had come for you to move on to the next phase there and leave that part behind. But reflecting back on it now, if you had the opportunity, if you were that age again and were given that opportunity, would you take it again?
Absolutely. I think it wasn't only good for me, I guess it was good for our kids and our family to be able to grow up in because it wasn't only myself making the sacrifice, it was them making the sacrifice. And when I actually left, my kids would have been upper elementary, junior high age. So they were old enough to know what was going on, where I was at, and all that kind of stuff. So it gave them a good perspective for them, for their own lives going forward. So I think, you know, it was certainly a sacrifice of our time and energy for the family and myself, but I certainly wouldn't change it.
Well, we appreciate you doing it, because not everybody would step up to the plate like that, and we do salute you for your service and everything you've done to ensure that we can still live the lives that we love here. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
appreciate
for coming in.
You bet.